With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, ex-Scotland international Johnny Beattie and former France hooker Benjamin Kayser. Another dramatic weekend in the top 14, which we'll have a bit of a chat about later on, but we'll mainly focus on the next step in France's Six Nations Grand Slam quest in Cardiff this weekend. We'll get a Welsh view on the game from a man who's played in France and should have a few stories to share with us as well. And we're coming off the back of a fallow week in the Six Nations. So quite a week, Benji.
Quite a weekend because no rugby at the weekend, even though you guys never ask about Tomo Jarls, and I'm quite happy because the results are terrible.
Go on.
We're terrible. Great bunch of lads, but we're missing a couple injuries. It's injuries, mate. It's injuries in the ref.
Yeah, they're well coached. That's what I've heard.
They're extraordinarily coached, obviously. fantastic spirit. At least everybody's got a smile on their faces and they're having fun. That's the main thing. But no relegation this year. Actually suits us pretty well because we are not doing great on the table. But no, just excited about the weekend, excited about the last 2 weeks.
How about you, Johnny?
I was up in Paris last night for the Classical for Stade Francais against Toulouse. But it was quite nice just to have one game of rugby. But no, looking forward to this weekend, getting it back. I'm doing the 20s actually over in Treviso, which again might be a wooden spoon decider, as might the main event on Saturday. So no, had a good weekend, quiet Friday, Saturday with Jen and the kids, which was actually really nice to have a little break in the fallow week away from the Six Nations, but also looking forward to getting it back and back on the road this weekend.
Let's talk about Cardiff then, not Scotland, Johnny.
Who's interested in that?
Gregor Townsend might have ignored you. Do you think Wayne Pivett's been listening and Dan Bigger, is he the kind of fly-half that we might see employing your game plan?
Well, the roof is definitely open. And I think when you look at the skill set of Dan Bigger, how good he is with his kicking game, you look at Liam Williams, you look at how talented they are in the air, you think they're going to have to go down that road and test France, where they haven't really been tested yet. A little bit of Murrayfield, and they got a little bit changed the Scots, but you got to think people are going to look at the couple of times Melvin Jaminet wobbled a little bit, the contest in there, and you'd think again, if Villiers comes back in, or if it's Moefana, they're going to get tested as well. So I think it'll be difficult for Wales. We touched on it last week, Benji, with the lack of personnel and injuries, a few people coming back in with Faletau. But I think tactically, I think they'll do what no other side has done so far and bombard them in the air. They might not. They might not listen to me again. It doesn't matter. But look, there are loads of different other parts of the game. They're going to have to be at their best if they're going to beat this French side, because France have been utterly dominant in other sections too.
I hear your point, and I think you're right that there's going to be a strategic battle in terms of using Liam Williams for what he's the best in the world at. Dan Bigger, probably the only guy who can kick a high ball and go contest it on his own. Okay, but what I told you guys last week is that that game did not work against England. It definitely didn't. They're not South Africa. They're not England, potentially. They can't just rely on the kicking game. And I think they saw it. I don't think they care about France a lot. I think they care about themselves and they're going to focus on their game, if you know what I mean. They're going to look at their Six Nations. And if they're going to learn from the last England-Wales game, where for the first 20, they did fuck all. And when nothing happens, they were just dominated by England. And actually, when they made a mess of the game in the second half, that's when England were all over the shop. And that's when we got back to the, you know, the good old days of Welsh rugby. So I have a feeling that maybe I didn't hear what you said right to Johnny, but if it's competing in the air, I think you're right. If it's then kicking the corners, I disagree, because I don't think they know how to do it. I don't think they will do it. I think if it's everything contestable, yeah. And that would be clever, to be fair, because they are very, very good at it. They don't have the dominant power. I think if you give away possession, but you get melted up front nonstop, it's a long day. It's a long, long day at the office. So I have a feeling like, and I hope to have a wild game, that they're going to actually chuck the ball around and be like, right, if we're going to use kicking game, it's going to be to regather it. So it's going to be small chipping, small chips, kicks to go around the blitz defense. It's going to be kicking the corner diagonal, you know, to use Liam Williams and to use all those guys who can catch the ball in the air. And it's to go around the French power rather than just controlling the game by territory, because I do not see that working for them.
And the lineup has struggled, isn't it, Johnny?
I'm not sure if that's the influence of Alan Wynne-Jones. Again, how much was England stepping across the line, putting them under pressure? But really, the Welsh boys, without Alan Wynne, they've got enough to be able to settle a line out, to set a line, to refuse an opposition line out closing the space. They have enough experience, but for whatever reason at Twickenham, they absolutely crumpled. And yeah, it'll have to be on point, because again, France, that's an area they've come on leaps and bounds over the past couple of seasons. But yeah, back to your point, Benji, 100%. I mean, contestables, chips, refusing the physical battle. And then we've seen, like we did at Twickenham, when Wales hold on to ball in the right areas, they're good rugby players. They're smart rugby players. They've got good athletes. Cuthbert coming back on his 50th, freakish to watch. But I just think if there's a lesson to be learned playing against this French side, it's you can't muck around in your own half. And the way they will get out or choose to exit, I think, like you mentioned as well, will be contestable in the air, getting their fullback onto the ball and trying to cause some havoc. And then off that scrappy ball that's generated or created, if they win those 50-50s, trying to capitalize. But otherwise, we've seen like Scotland trying to play out of your own third, disaster. So yeah, a different type of game plan. But again, it might be more difficult than we think for the Welsh boys as well. Again, Friday night, they really struggled to sell tickets. Bizarrely, like there are loads of Welsh agents still trying to sell tickets to Frenchmen and French agents over here in France. So there was 20-odd thousand across at Murrayfield 2 weeks ago. I think that number might even be further north of 20,000. You're looking 25, 30,000 potentially, because they're really struggling to sell tickets on the Welsh end.
Well, that might change things a bit, but I was going to ask, people often talk about the Principality Stadium as being one of the theatres of world rugby, the best place to play. And is that atmosphere on a Friday night going to be a factor, Benji?
Well, there are no rugby stadiums that are hostile. Don't get me wrong. The ones who say that, it's just, you know, for the promo, but the intensity, most definitely. Very, very hot and a special, special place. Closeness to the line of the stands. I think it was Ryan Jones telling me that this is the steepest angle of stadiums in the world. And I think it's a fantastic stadium to play in. If you get the experience of having the closed roof and the fireworks and the bish bash bosh of Welsh rugby at its full tilt with the Mike Phillips and Jamie Roberts and all those dudes, that was zero fun, because they were lightning fast, because they were ahead of everybody else in terms of conditioning, because they were ahead of everybody else in terms of pure size of backline, because they were ahead of everybody else, and then everybody caught up. And then obviously, like, these are the successes that we saw in the early 2000s or the mid 2000s. I didn't hear this thing about lack of tickets. I really hope that they're going to sell them all, because it would be so disappointing considering how big France are at the moment, how exciting that game looks. But it overall, it just is one of those places where you close your eyes because of the noise, because of the general feeling of the place. You're at the Millennium Stadium and nowhere else in the world. And that is special. So it's a treat more than anything. It's not hostile, it's just a treat.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Let's get a Welsh perspective on the game now then, and we can have a chat with former Wales and British and Irish Lions international and ex-wrestling and Bayern scrum half Mike Phillips. How you doing?
How's it going? You okay?
We're good. Let's get straight into it. Benji sounded nervous last week. This week, he says Wales have got no chance. What do you reckon?
Yeah, well, what we've seen so far, I mean, it would suggest that France, you know, obviously they're on top form, and it's great to see, actually. Because they've been rubbish for 15 years. I'm joking. I mean, yeah, it's great. It's great to see, you know, France. I think it's great for the world game that having France at the top and what they've produced in the last year. You know, the win against New Zealand was amazing. You know, they dominated them and won easily. And with the World Cup coming in France, you know, I would pick them as favourites for the World Cup even. And Sean Edwards there, he's obviously made a difference. Know him personally from Wales, and I'm pleased for him. And so, yeah, you know, and the individual players they got, you know, it makes you want to watch the game. And I think they're putting rugby on the map. So they've been great to see. So, and with DuPont, I mean, he's a superstar, isn't he? I mean, I knew I was ready to retire when I'm starting to praise scrum halves. So he's something special, isn't he? So, yeah, they're on top at the minute, and I think you have to make them favourites for the game. Having said that, you know, Wales were superb in our second half, and I think, you know, if they can start off there, you know, I think it could be a close game.
You mentioned that man, Sean Edwards. Just how much of an impact and a motivator was he? Can you give us a little insight into how much of an impact he had on your career and that Welsh side that was so phenomenal in the noughties?
Yeah, I think he's like a mad genius. You know, he thinks outside the box. And I think, I'll give you an example. He made me man mark Willie LaRue for South Africa. So Willie LaRue, in the first test, he scored 3 tries against us, carved us up. And in the second week then, he said, "Oh, Mike, I want you to man mark him." Well, obviously he's 15, you know, but he didn't score in the second test. You know what I mean? And it's just like the way that his mind was thinking was something different. And it's so passionate. You know, sometimes he'd forget players' names, but just because he's the passion is just, you know, boiling over, and he's just brilliant. So, no, yeah, massive. And even to this day, you know, he'd send me a little message just seeing how I am and stuff. So, yeah, that goes a long way, you know. And when I finished, said some nice things to me. So, you know, those personal touches, you know, go a long way.
I'll give you the rugby knowledge sort of type of question, but is it true that he puts so much emphasis on the role of the scrum half, even in the defensive line? Because always see this Antoine Dupont is like third in line, right? Like, imagine you have guard, block, whatever you call them around the ruck. And normally he asks his 9 to be the third guy to actually, you know, speed up on the first receiver and use the legs. And guys, so actually, well, obviously you're a lot taller, but still very powerful and quick, like Toto Dupont. Is it something that's really important to him in his defensive system?
Yeah, I think so. Well, he used to put me definitely on the front line, you know, in the defensive line. Sometimes I was on the short side defense and I'd have to be on the end and organizing that defense, but he would want me to fill in anywhere and really be aggressive. And yeah, I definitely got picked for my defensive roles at times. But with DuPont, I think, and with Gareth Davis as well, I think he's noticed that they're very quick and he uses their pace to sort of fly up on their own and sort of scare teams, you know what I mean? And it's, again, that's his sort of genius, using someone's pace, you know, using someone's attributes, you know, in a positive way. And he's constantly thinking outside the box. And, yeah, he definitely wants scrum halves to be involved 100%. You know, it's not just attack. You know, you've got to do your job and in defensive roles as well.
Were you surprised to see him take the job in France or not?
No, not really. I think he wanted the head role of Wales, I think. So I think that didn't quite happen for him. Yeah, so not good for him, isn't it? You know, I'm delighted to see them kick on and do so well when he's gone there as well. So having been in France, you know, sometimes the coach gets the sack. Yeah, having experience by on especially. But yeah, so it's great for him. And he is one of the best in the world, I think. And, you know, he's had a massive influence on my career.
We might come on to that French side of things in a minute. But before we leave the France-Wales game, where are Wales at the moment under Wayne Pivac? Because they obviously won the tournament last year. Things seem to be turning around now. Where are we at?
Yeah, I mean, I like Wayne. I mean, I came out of retirement and played for the Scarlets for two games in South Africa. Yeah, I thought he was amazing. It's great to see him win the Six Nations last year, because I think the worrying thing, you know, with Gatland and all that, and he was there for such a long period. You know, his first year, people are quick to sort of slate him, but I think he's definitely the right man for the job. And I think he was, you know, we were in need of a change as well. You know, a change is good. And so, yeah, it was pleasing for him to win last year and just sort of to shut people up a bit. So, yeah, I think it's a bit of a transition period. A lot of youngsters coming in, a lot of learning is being done, and hopefully they can kick on now and, you know, go to the next level.
And do you think, so you mentioned it earlier, because I was at the England-Wales game and they did fuck all for the first half and it was so boring, both sides. And then the second half, when they actually started playing a little bit unconventional stuff, but at least when he just started putting pace, they really put England under pressure, right? They were just playing the good old days of Welsh rugby, which was innovative, fast pace, sort of attacking full flow, you know, style of rugby. And that's when we saw them again. They would put them in the trouble. So do you think they're going to concentrate on themselves, irrelevantly of if it's France, Africa, England, whoever's in front of them on Friday, or they're going to try to beat France, which would mean a lot more kicking game, a lot more strategic stuff, because if they play that fast pace and drop the ball against France, they can be dead meat.
No, I think it suits us to play quick. You know, we're not necessarily a big nation. You know, we haven't got massive forwards. You know, so we need to play quick ball. We need to, you know, tap and go and, you know, play a high tempo. You know, Thomas Williams is having, it's nice to see him having regular rugby and starting, because that was an issue as well. We were always changing the scrum half. So it's nice to see him settled into that first place now, and he can create a lot for us. Nice to see Cuthy getting some you know, having some great runs and stuff. But yeah, we need to play with our tempo, and Pivac wants that sort of wide channel rugby, and yeah, we have to play with tempo, and you know, it suits us as a sort of, you know, as we are, as you know, a stature really, I think.
In pre-tournament, Sam Warburton predicted bizarrely that Wales would finish fifth. Currently sitting fifth right now, you mentioned the chopped and changed, a few injuries. A result this weekend and Italy coming last, it could flip either way. Like, it could be a fifth place finished, or it could be a third, fourth or higher. So looking towards the end of the tournament, what would you say would be a respectable finish for this Welsh side this year?
Well, I think I said it. I think it's a year of learning, really. I think players would have gone to Twickenham, and I think they would be sat in that change room thinking, geez, we should have believed in ourselves a bit more. And I think at the highest level, sometimes it's about that, it's about confidence. The regions haven't done well, they haven't won a game in Europe. So, you know, confidence can't have been high going into the Six Nations. And, you know, I guarantee, like, knowing the mentality of Welsh people, they don't back themselves enough. And, you know, I think that having those experiences, and I think they'll learn a lot. So, answer your question, I'm not too concerned about where they'll end up. I think a lot of these players will gain so much from this Six Nations, because last year I think we did have a bit of luck. We had a lot of red cards, you know, and I think that they perhaps would have thought, oh, this is easy, this international malarkey, and it's not. You know, I think this year is more about learning, and then hopefully they can push on. So to answer your question, I don't know.
And give us your view on this France side then, because you loved a bit of flair, obviously, but they're quite pragmatic as well under Fabien Galthié. So what do you make of them overall?
Oh yeah, they're just exciting, aren't they? And exciting individuals. Like I said, the game against New Zealand was amazing. You know, it wasn't a scrappy win. There was flair running it from their own 22. And that's what we all love to see from French national teams. So, you know, we all loved watching, you know, those teams of the 90s, and it's great that they're playing back that way, because there was, I know I joked about it before, but there were a couple of years there where France were pretty poor, you know, and, you know.
Yeah, thanks, mate. It was my years.
No, but Scott spared in the team. And
yeah, Scott and me.
No, but, no, you know, I want to see good rugby, you know, and I think they're on top. You know, it's great to see.
And when you started your career, they were winning Six Nations. So how do you think this side, I know they haven't won a Six Nations yet, but they may go on to do it this year. How do they compare to the strong French sides that you faced?
Yeah, I think the last time they won, was it 2006? Was it?
2010
10,
they won it.
Grand Slam in 10.
Yeah, because they won it once, and I played my first Six Nations game, and I was man of the match, but we still lost.
And there was a reason for bringing that up.
Like I said, I mean, I think I like the way that they've brought the youngsters through now, the under-20s. I think the DuPont era, they've kind of blooded them and sort of given those boys an opportunity. So, you know, fair do. Well, you know, it's great fun.
Let's touch on your time in France then. You mentioned it a bit earlier on. You went to Bayonne. That was after the 2011 World Cup. So was that a big call at that time to move to France?
So I just bought a book out. And I wasn't allowed to mention anything about Bayonne in the book. So,
Johnny knows all about that.
They're with you, mate. I feel your pain.
But I love Bayonne. I absolutely love it. I mean, the fans are amazing. I loved it. I loved it too much, to be honest. Got myself in a few bits of trouble, but I loved it. I thought I loved living in Biarritz, going to training on a Vespa with a vest on. And, you know, you can't, that's just unbelievable. And I think the fans, you know, were amazing. The song was just, I think it's one of the best rugby songs. Bayonne, what's it called?
The Peña Bayonne.
Peña Bayonne, that's amazing. So yeah, but it, you know, unfortunately, things as a team, perhaps we weren't quite there. But you know, as a rugby club, was amazing, really. So I never say anything bad about it.
Mate, it was some team you had as well. Like, it's weird that you mentioned that Welsh players don't back themselves enough. Like, it's amazing that you would pick that up and you would say that, because every time on the field, like, you absolutely backed yourself. One of my first memories.
But that was my job.
Of course it was. But mate, it was hilarious being on the other end of it as well. Like, I loved it. Like, one of my earliest memories in Montpellier was coming to Bayonne for one of our first games. And so, like, I'm packing down with my team. There's Augustin Creevy, Juan Fagallo, Mamuka Gorgodzi. And then the other side, like, you had Chisholm, Tialata, I think potentially Lowacki might have been there as well. I can't remember. But
I
remember you coming to feed the ball into a scrum for Bayonne. But in English, so the French boys didn't understand. But Mike Phillips, like, British Lion, coming up to tick, and he's like, oh, fucking hell, boys. My back is fucking breaking carrying load. You're fucking useless. Can you hurry the fuck up? And do you know what I mean? Like, all of you boys crumpled kind of laughing, and all the English boys, all the Anglo boys on my side. Again, I was like, one of my first games in France, but I loved it. The confidence and the brashness that you brought. And the exact same, another one exactly the same was, I remember playing a Six Nations game against you at the Millennium at the time. And the exact same, like we talked about as well, the role of a nine with Sean Edwards. But I can remember the exact same scenario, like packing down for a scrum and you like chinning Ryan Jones. Is it Ryan Jones or Andy Powell? I can't remember. You're like, fucking hell, boys, you must love playing with me. Must be like it must be like playing with four back rows. Fucking hell, I'm melting people today. This is amazing. And again, like the biggest games you can have, Six Nations game, huge viewership. But again, the little interactions that you don't get on TV and you don't pick up. But again, for me, like, cracked me up on that. Like, I absolutely loved it. I thought it was hilarious. So again, maybe Welsh players don't back themselves enough, but you absolutely did.
Nous avons gagné le match grâce à moi.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's all I ever said. Even when we lost, they used to say it.
And that must have been frustrating for you, coming from a Welsh side that was super organized, like almost better coached, fitter, more aggressive, you know, coming to Bayonne where they had the budget. We won't talk about like the other side of Bayonne. We'll just talk about the rugby side. But when you had like a Tialata, you had Chisholm, you had Jorah Kokoko, you had Cedric Haymans, you had yourself. But in the end, you ended up in a relegation battle. Like, it's crazy to think that must have been really frustrating as a player.
Yeah, it was. And it was on the back of 2011, the Rugby World Cup. So I arrived my first year. I was obviously in the World Cup. So I arrived late. And yeah, you know, we were up against it. So And yeah, just the change in, they were looking for quick fixes all the time, you know, that they sacked the coach pretty much straight away. And it was always like, as if, you know, not picking up the dirt, just pushing it under the carpet and not, you know, it was just, it was frustrating, but you know, you get on with it. But there we are, you know, it was an amazing experience. Got to play with some top players and yeah, I loved the whole experience of it all. But yeah, it was a shame that we couldn't perform, but I think we ended up seventh once, but and that was seen as quite a positive. You know, we weren't ready for the top tier of it. You know, we were way off. But yeah, what an experience.
I was going to ask you about how it ended, but I don't want to let her in the post any more than you or Johnny do. So how did the move to Racing come about?
Well, I think things happened, obviously, and then Rog was there. And I think I played the autumn series for Wales with no club. So like Mike Phillips, number 9, no club. So that was quite, and I was obviously telling the boys, see boys, I don't need to play club rugby, I'm just play international. That was like a running joke, but yeah, no, they obviously Racing called up then, and yeah, the setup, the professionalism was much, much better. And you know, the squad again was amazing. But like I say, if we could have had the fans from Bayonne with the team in Racing, I mean, that would have been special. But and then the likes of, you know, Dan Carter turning up was pretty cool. And yeah, Chris Massoe, and you know, we had a class team, and yeah, we won the league. So yeah, that was special again.
It must have been quite strange doing it with a couple of Welsh boys as well, because you were there with Danny Lydia. I remember bumping into him in Paris, and Jamie Roberts was there at the same time, wasn't he?
Yeah, when I was in Bayonne, I really did try to make an effort and sit, you know, spend time just sitting next to the French players and listening and trying to learn the language. And then, but it was hard then in Racing because the French players were trying to learn English, so completely opposite to they seen the benefit. Whereas in Bayonne, you know, it was like, you know, you speak French, so it was tough then. And yeah, my French went out the window really.
And you mentioned Carter before. Is it true he helped you meet your wife?
Yeah, so we were out having dinner and just at the bottom of Champs-Élysées, and he comes over to me. He goes, "Oh, Mike, these girls have bought you a drink." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, that's normal. Girls buy me
again."
And he goes, "Oh, you better go and say thanks." So I waltzed over to this table with three girls, sit down, and they obviously, you know, haven't got a clue who I am. And they obviously haven't bought me a drink, but I'm just, the girl I sat next to was now my wife. So yeah, in a roundabout way, he did sort of introduce me, but she did ignore me all that night. but I managed to, track her down then.
So as good a bloke off the field as he was on it.
Yeah, he's a top guy. Yeah, what an individual, great, great character. What a player as well. Didn't put a foot wrong, always made the right decision. Never made a mistake. And I think that's what youngsters need to realize. It's not always about doing the flash stuff, just making, you know, doing the right decisions all the time. And yeah, what a character, you know, off the field. Me and him went to Monaco Grand Prix together. That was good fun. You know, he is a top, top guy, down to earth, good fun, likes a beer, you know. So
you mentioned you loved it in the south of France. So Paris seems like it must have suited you down to the ground, eh?
Yeah, well, Paris, nobody knows anything about rugby there, really. You know, even the French players passing out on the Champs-Élysées, no one cared, no photos. And so that was quite nice. Yeah, completely different. I'm so happy that I experienced the beach side and then the city, you know, because, you know, 5 years in France and sort of ticked both boxes, which was pretty special. So, yeah, I loved it.
Talk to us about the whole, what I mentioned to you when we were in Dubai, that whole pictures sent on social media to Isabelle Iturburu. I want to know how that came along. Why the hell did you ever think that it was a good idea to post a picture? It's basically banter with a presenter that does Canal Plus, who's a very pretty lady.
Yeah.
And then it comes back with a picture of, it's obviously banter, but in the end, it's a picture of you with your six pack out going, "Are you sure?" So I want to know, where the hell was that from?
So I was traveling back to Bayonne. So we just won the Six Nations. And so I'm in the back of the car, just on Twitter. And I seen her message something, tweet. So I tweeted her, "Allez Bayonne," or something. So just something really stupid. And she responded. And I was single. And I thought, oh, great.
I'm in.
Yeah, if they respond, I was, you know. So then, yeah, there's a bit of banter. And then I asked her if she's single or something. And then she said, yes, I'm very happily married. So I was like, oh, I can't let her have this. So I scrolled through my phone and looked for a picture of me, my top off, looking good. So then I sent it, boom. Are you sure? 66 caps.
That's the best one. Hashtag 66 caps.
Because that would have made the difference.
I tell you what,
you went from zero to a hero in France with one picture. Mate, all I the lads, everybody. Absolute I walked into the legend.
Room, right? Walked into the changing room. The boys went nuts. They were going nuts. And I just won the Six Nations. They didn't care about that. And then I was playing, and every game I played, players of the opposition were like laughing and going to me, hey, are you sure?
Right, that was brilliant. That was too funny.
Oh, so good. And mate, tell us a little bit about life now. Where are you based? What are you up to? You've obviously got books, coffees, gins flying off the shelves as well. Tell us a little bit about it all and how you're getting on.
Well, this week we've just launched. We're going to be partnering up with WRU. We're bringing out a low alcoholic spirit. So that's been launched last week. So that's pretty exciting. So me, Shane Williams, Lee Byrne, and James Hook. So we've got that on the go, which was great. And we were up with British Airways in Twickenham and last week. So yeah, that's really exciting. And then we've also got a coffee together, which is going well. We've only been going a year, so been doing bits of that back in Wales. So that's been nice. So we've always stuck together, you know, after rugby, but it's nice to sort of go into business together. And we do lots of speaking events together, and you know, it's great to catch up with them as well and keep in contact. So we've got that going on. But I'm based in Dubai full time. So you've got two kids there now, two boys, and so yeah, we love it. So yeah, there's lots going on. So you know, life's pretty good.
Judging by some of the stories, the Fab Four and a low alcoholic spirit brand, is there an irony there?
it's where the world's going, isn't it? No, it's exciting. So, you know, like I say, it's been run really well. It's been packaged really well. So, you know, always seems to be positive messages. So, yeah, that's pretty exciting, really. So, yeah, hopefully it'll do well.
And very quickly, before we let you go back on the game, you mentioned Sean Edwards earlier on. We know he'll be super motivated going back to Wales, especially after how it all ended there. Give us your prediction.
Well, I think it'll be close, but probably France will take it in the end. I don't know, maybe, do you need a score or?
Well, you can leave that to those two if you want, sit on the fence.
Yeah, I'll sit on the fence. But I think they've just got a bit too much offering. You know, they've got some really powerful forwards and some clinical backs. Yeah, and Sean's going to be revved up to the max. So yeah, I can't really see, you know, from what I've seen so far, you know, you wouldn't say that the Wales are going to be favourites in the game. But I just want to see a better performance and hopefully, you know, that same sort of second half. And as we mentioned, you know, just a bit more of a clinical sort of performance, really.
Cheers, Mike. Great to have you on, and good luck with all the many ventures.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Cheers, guys.
Go well,
thanks,
mate.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
I didn't know that story you mentioned there, Benji.
Nice. It's
hashtag 66 caps.
Hashtag amazing. 66 caps. I don't think there's another guy in the world that would have the nuts to do what he did. Like it was the funniest thing that, and nobody, everybody's seen. And I mean, in the 2000s, it was by a mile the funniest thing. And it was the beginning of social media, so you didn't know what you could say or not say. And French were really, really barely starting at it, so nobody really knew what it was. Are you sure? And you have to find a picture of him. It's a sleazy picture of him like this, you know? Like,
yeah, you'll find it.
Expect. So, man, don't get me wrong, he's ripped to the bones. He obviously looks good, but hashtag 66 caps is exactly what tips it off for me. I actually think she was married to Gonzalo Quesada at the time.
Yeah, she was.
Which is now the coach of Stade. So I don't think it would have made him laugh at all, but we could.
Well, we chatted about what might pan out in terms of the game with Mike, but in terms of team selection, Gavin Villiers back. So does he come straight back in for Mo Farna? No changes apart from that?
It would be a tough one because Moefana, bloody hell, he had a good game against Ireland, and then he confirmed against Scotland. But Gabin Villiers was the standout player, has been a standout player. They love him for his attitude, for the way that he impacts the general morale of the team by his toughness, his general overall toughness. And if you want to ensure that you go with that right attitude, because if they have the right, let's put it this way, if they have the right attitude, there's no chance they're going to win, in my mind, right? If France lose, it's going to be a big slip up of them. So it could be that. And also for the last 2 years, the one thing that the management side can pride themselves on is how reliable they've been in their team selection and how much you only lose your spot if you've been shit on the field. A bit like what, you know, I think it's what the All Blacks were saying. You lose your spot with jersey on, not jersey off. And you always saw that guys would come back after a year out of for injury and they would come back and start with the same jersey. You know, you don't lose it while you go away, irrespectively of how good the other guy's been. And I think France has really been like that. Look, typically Julien Marchand, Peato Movaca, 40 points against New Zealand. He still starts against Italy and all the others. So I have a feeling that Gabin Villiers will be back and Moefana is the perfect replacement because he can cover multiple positions.
The only one there's a question mark is Greg Aldrett. He's sick. He's not training at the minute. So is that going to be a late change? We don't know. But you think hopefully it's going to be a quick gastro and he'll be back in training for the team run on Thursday, Friday, and he'll get on the plane. So no, I'd agree. Villiers back in. Moefana drops down to the bench and hopefully Greg Aldrett will still be there and still be starting this week too.
Let's have a quick word on the other two games in round four of the Six Nations now then and get your predictions in, most importantly, for the Guinness Pint Predictor from Match Pint. If you haven't had a go yet, it definitely isn't too late to join in, and there's a chance to win a pint of Guinness with every game, as well as weekly prizes as well. All you have to do is pick the winner of each game and how many they'll win by, and don't forget to enter our league with the code LARUGBY once you've downloaded the Match Pint app as well. Johnny?
yes, mate.
Italy, Scotland, are you still worried?
No. Yeah, a little bit, but no. No, I think that will be straightforward-ish. I think it's going to be bloody hard for 50 minutes and then hopefully Italy will crack. But I think a 15-16 point win for Scotland. I think hopefully they can get back on track. Saying that, Italy that we talked about last week, they've got such a big point to prove. Again, incredibly proud of their performance against Ireland with 13 men, which must have been horrendous. They'll be desperate to get back to Rome. I don't think it's going to be easy for Scotland, but I think it will be a nut that will be cracked eventually, and they'll keep toiling away and they'll find some holes in that Italy defensive line. So I'm going to go Scotland by 14.
Well, I've got two ways of seeing this. Do I give my honest opinion, or do I try to finally claw back into this race of the Match Pint where I've been terrible? Yes. So do I try to go to all in on Italy sneaking a win by 1 point? I'm the only one who's going to bet on this because I'm the only one to bet that they would beat England by 35 points because I pressed the wrong button, apparently, and try to sneak my way in. So I will go for Italy by 1 point because that's my only chance. I want to win this thing. And to be fair, I don't see, what did you say, 15 points? Is that what you said?
14. Johnny? Very 14. Different, 15.
Yeah. I have a feeling it's going to be very, very tight. Because Scotland's morale is down, mate. I think they really got hurt. I don't know about their injuries, if there's guys coming back and stuff, but as soon as they drop, I think they lost their whole back row basically in the first three games, which is very complicated. Hamish Watson was positive to COVID, so I'm sure he'll be back.
But Jamie Ritchie.
Even still, and yeah, Jamie Ritchie's out and Fagerson is still out.
Fagerson,
right?
That's right.
So that's a lot for them. So I'll and I think Italy, even though we spoke about this whole rule thing and how, listen, he applied the rule of the book and it had nothing to do with them, they feel that it got a little bit done, not because of the rule was wrongly applied, but because it's a stupid rule and there should be an angle to it if you have a hooker that can potentially, or a prop that can potentially go to hooker, don't get me wrong, which is the only case scenario where that rule doesn't make sense. So yeah, so I'll go Italy by 1 point. Not because I think they will smack Scotland, just because I want to claw back. And if there's a small chance that it happens, it could be this weekend.
But you know what? If they do, it answers a lot of questions. It's great for the tournament.
Yeah.
And it means that I'm no longer part of the last side that lost to Italy. Yeah. So I'd be delighted.
I lost to Italy. We always keep on banging on Italy and stuff. I lost there.
Exactly. So do you know what? It'd be great for the tournament and it would shut a lot of people up. So especially with their 20s kids that are pushing through that are a decent crop as well, it'd be a huge result for them. Yeah, Italy by 1 point for Benji and Scotland by 14 for me.
England, Ireland, Benji.
That's a really tough one.
Yeah.
I think Ireland are better. I think Ireland are more experienced, faster paced. Well, everybody's up for it to play in England anyway, so there's never a question for it about it. I just feel they are an incredible rugby team, and France really had to step up to the plate to do well against them a couple of weeks ago. But England are angry. England are powerful. England really played 50% of what they've got in the tank against Wales. But if Manu had played against Wales, it was coming back. If, you know, they had a bit more striking power in the backs, yes, I just don't think they have a combo yet that works as a 12-13, or then you have a 10 like Owen Farrell who smacks people in the face and can potentially carry the ball. But if you have Marcus Smith, who's an incredible rugby player, he needs an Esteluzin, right? He needs a big old unit next to him, or at least not even a unit, just somebody who's able, not a creator, but a sort of a carrier. And I just don't think they have it at the moment. So that lack of balance doesn't sit well with me. That lack of certainty of what the back row is going to look like doesn't sit well with me. So I'll put Ireland ahead by 3 points, let's say. But that will be a close game.
Mate, I've just written down Ireland by 3 points. That is absolutely incredible. I'm sort of the same in that I look at those two sides and I almost expect loads more from both of them. It's really like they're packed full of talent. But again, Ireland undone a little bit over in France, then against 13 men, probably should have stuck 100 points on them, but didn't, and were committing unforced errors. England don't look too settled. Like you mentioned, need a 12. Well, how are they trying to play? Nobody really knows. What I'm hoping is that this weekend, that's going to be the game of the tournament. I don't know why, but I'm hoping that they both spark, they both fire, they both find that stride that everyone's been waiting for, and they give us a real game. That being said, advantage England because they're at home. But again, I just think Ireland, when you watching the way Leinster play, the way they operate as a team, when they fire and they stick together, they're just phenomenal. So again, I don't think it's going to be a massive score, but I'm with you, Benji. I've got Ireland by three as well. I'm really looking forward to the Sexton-Smith contest, the head-to-head and how they run their sides. But no, I believe Ireland have got enough strength, enough depth, and enough about them to go to Twickenham and nick a result.
And Friday Night Lights in Cardiff. Wales, France, Johnny.
I think everybody's leaning the same way. I think there's going to be a pile of travelling support as well, which helps the Frenchmen on the field. And I just think the way they're playing, they're going to be too hot to handle. I think they'll have too much up front. I think if Wales give away any field position, they'll be crucified the way that every other side has been so far in the tournament. France, again, not really losing anybody to injury. Full strength, settled, confident. And again, they won there 2 years ago. Intermac intercepting, going up the touchline, blitz defense again. And I just think there's only one way Wales are going to win this game. It's by blitzing the air, gathering some scrappy field position and stringing together some phases and scoring. And I just think France at the minute are too well organized. And I don't think Wales will be able to contain them. So I'm going to go France to win away on Friday night by 12.
I was going to say 12 because I had in my mind 25-13. But then I'll change it and 12.
You need to beat Johnny. Oh, so no.
Hold on. 13. I'll go to 13. One more. 13.
And I'll go back. I'll go Ireland by four.
If you want to lose, fine.
Make it different as well.
I've made already my predictions for round five, just so you know, but it's
just to make sure there's no technical errors.
Exactly.
You've got them.
Exactly. I've been looking.
Okay. Let's have a quick chat about the top 14 before we go as well. And Biarritz, Johnny, losing to Toulon. Are they done?
That's it.
Even the president, even JB Aldige came out and said, look, we've toiled hard. The morale is up. But we've not made a sustained attempt this season. And we don't have enough to stay up. So I think, again, if your president's coming out with that message, it's a clear sign that things aren't right. I bumped into Steph Armitage did a bit in the press. I bumped into a couple of the Irish players in the airport in Paris. They were saying like they didn't have any hot water in the training center for the past 10 days. Like they've all had to either have cold showers in between training or go home. Again, political turmoil, the club against the Mairie in Biarritz, like it's an absolute shambles. So it's a place that isn't stable at the minute. They've toiled really hard together as a group and tried to make it stick on the field. Their lineout fell apart at the weekend, and they just don't have the depth to compete at this level. They've got some fantastic rugby players, don't get me wrong, and some fantastic blokes as well, but I think that's them gone now. Again, with other sides around them winning, it's just going to be too hard. They are too far gone. It's shifting 45 points at home to Toulon, who've been battling. Really disappointing, but you think now it's going to be too tough. That is them 2 feet in Pro D2.
And if they don't even have hot water, Benji, is it just the case that if the infrastructure isn't there, you know, they've got some talent clearly, but the setup isn't right?
Well, don't forget that Birds have been struggling for years, and out of absolutely nowhere, did they finish fifth or something of Pro D2 last year, or fourth minimum? And then they ended up sneaking a win, right? So it was already a little bit out of nowhere. They beat Van in the semi. Yeah. They should have last minute. And then they, you know, lost the final and then beat, who was it? Oh, it was Bayonne, wasn't it? In quite an extraordinary manner. So are they a talented team? Absolutely. Do they love each other? 100%. And they really have something special. Now, the facilities are archaic, or I don't know how you say that in English, but they're long gone. And it's complicated. So it's the harsh truth that heart and desire can work, and talent can work, and love for each other can work 100%. But it's complicated to make that sustainable over such a long season. It was such a dreadfully physically draining and mentally draining moments. I think they started their top 14 season with 2 wins, you know, so they deserve to be in top 14. It's not like poor Agen last year or 2 years before that scored 2 points the whole season, which was dreadful, which was zero fun. They actually challenged sides. They could have won away. They always threw their bodies on the line. I remember they almost beat, was it Bordeaux, and they beat a couple of teams at home, and they did really well. But the reality is that the intensity of this top 14 is out of this world, that every single team is very, very decent, that it's not top six, it's top 14 players now, or teams are really, really good. So it's actually a little bit disappointing that they didn't use that promotion to, let's bury the l'âge de guerre, don't you say that, you know, the
hatchet
of war, and let's finally push in the same direction. If anything, I think it made things worse because there was a bit of bitterness and jealousy and X, Y, and Z. So we're hearing they were going to Lille, and then you're hearing they were going to this, and then we shut the water because they didn't allow to pay for it. And then there's a development, there's no development. I mean, I love this place. I would love to retire in Biarritz and see some quality rugby. And I'll tell you right now, as soon as I have a bit of coin, like Johnny, I will buy a house in Biarritz and I will fly in and out. I want to commute from Biarritz anywhere in the world. It's a beautiful, wonderful region of France that makes me feel so proud to be French. But when they kick up a shitstorm over a bill, over I decide, you don't decide, that doesn't make me proud. And I'm pissed off about it. Such a waste of talent of a region that breathes rugby. But with Bayonne, yeah, man, whatever. Two clubs in a couple of kilometers in a small region already. You're not talking about Lyon and its neighbor. It's two small, big villages that are next to each other. So I think it's just a waste. It's a little bit sad, to be fair. But I actually loved how LDG was smart enough to say, well, we're done. But if we're going to be in second division, it's time to prepare now. And we're going to hit the ground running whilst if we do need to go down. So I think it's the healthy way to do it. But let's just sort out this problem because it's fun. The rivalry, oh, Fusion, no Fusion. It's great fun. I'm fed up with it. I want to see something big and something proper. Whoever does it, just do it, please.
And at the other end of the table, they're still top. But what's happened to Bordeaux? 4 defeats on the spin now and losing 23-16 at home to Pau. It's a massive shock, isn't it?
Yeah, they lost Mathieu Jalibert in the warm-up again. That's the third time that he's had something this season and pulled out in the warm-up. So really disappointing for him, for the French side as well, that he's not going to be involved at all in the Six Nations. But I came across a weird stat. Basically, they haven't lost this season when they've had either Wauke or Jalibert in the team. You remove those two guys, that's the only time they've lost games. So Wauke hasn't lost a game. He's played for Bordeaux this season. Like a phenomenon, but he brings so much to the team. That's it. You pull two guys out in a team that normally functions well, and there's a few chinks in the armor. So again, weirdly, you have to pay credit a little bit to Poe. Poe have been toiling away, getting better, slowly building. They do not have a team of superstars. Like, you do not recognize, they're not household names, but they're well coached, they're organized, and they've gone to Bordeaux, a place that's been a fortress for two or three seasons under Christophe Urios, and played extremely well. So a bit of disruption in the warm-up for Christophe Urios and the Bordeaux side. Losing Jalibert is never easy, but you know, François Tranduc, my old mate, slotted in, played relatively well, but Pau were just fantastic. So yes, a bizarre, you would never bank on Pau going to Bordeaux and winning, but again, credit to Pau. They've built really nicely. They've got better as the year's gone on. And Piccheroni is the coach there, who used to be the under-20s coach, is doing a terrific job. So chapeau to them. And yeah, disappointment for Bordeaux, and really disappointment for Mathieu Jalibert, out injured again.
We mentioned Clermont last week, Benji. I said, is it starting to click? Another win?
So starting to click, I'm not so sure, but I think something really important happened is that I spoke to my mate Morgan Farr a couple of weeks ago. I obviously, you know, pumped him up and this and that. That's 10 minutes with Mike Phillips, and I'm the cockiest thing I've ever been. He's got such an influence on you. It's unbelievable. But I spoke to Morgan, and because I know him and I love him, he only sort of confirmed something that I already knew, that he would want to leave Clermont flying, right? He's put too much blood and sweat into this jersey to leave it in the shit way. And I was absolutely, I didn't see the game, but I saw the last 20 minutes. And I was so happy to see the Morgan that I love, who was yelling at everyone, who was screaming at the ref, at the opposition, but mainly at his forwards on every single battle at the end. There was more, I think it was 16-16 at 73rd minute or something like that. Obviously quite a tense finish. So, you know, every penalty and every kick and every chase counts. And he was absolutely leading front and front, putting his body on the line like he normally does. But on top of that, I saw a leader. I saw a charismatic, screamy little dog that he is. And he was just unreal. And on top of that, there's obviously the most important penalty of the game, 78th minute after a big driving maul. Who gets it? Morgan. And he nails it. And for me, and then obviously then there's sort of a little scuffle at the end, blah, 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 somebody kicks a ball, they end up scoring a game, which finishes it completely for them. But I was delighted to see this wrestle and to see Morgan, and everybody jumped on him at the end. And then he spoke again in the huddle. I sent a message after the game. I mean, years passed, but the balls of steel are still there. And it's really something that I believe. He is the bravest, most courageous rugby player you will ever meet on a rugby field. He's got this edge about him that is pure toughness, and his body's actually very weak, but his mind is the strongest thing you've ever seen. So yes, it takes him to different complicated edges from time to time. He's a horrendous card player because he hates losing, and he's a miserable shit when he does and you can't stand him. But my word, is he a competitor? My word, you always want him in your team because he's gonna fight until the last second. So I saw Clermont. I don't know if they're the way that they play actually particularly clicked, but the mindset definitely clicked. And he said, listen, now we've got to win every single game at home and cause one upset and we'll be in the top six. And then anything can happen from there. So I think be careful with Clermont, because when you're led by such a legend as him, and he's going to want to finish by the big door, you know, sortir par la grande porte, come out on by the big door. And you, after that, once you have that mindset, you don't know what can happen.
Mike Phillips has just WhatsApped to say, is he big enough a legend and confident enough to send a topless selfie to Isabelle Thuru?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure.
Oh.
And I haven't mentioned the Clasico between Stade Francais and Toulouse yet, but I think it might be about to come up, because it's time for our meter moment of the week. Is it from the Clasico, Johnny?
100%, mate. Absolutely. Meter moment of the week goes to Lua Mappe. For me, the Stade Francais 12, who is an absolute freak show with ball in hand. He's so good to watch. But it was a tied game, like 16-all. Again, it was a bit of a damp squib of the game, but 82nd minute, last play of the game, the counter's gone red and the ball comes out to Lua Mappe. Nothing is really on, but bang, explosive power. There's a 3-on-3 defensive edge. He steps inside Pierre Fusac with an awesome step off his right. He sits down the scrum half, Pajrello on his backside, breaks another tackle, and then offloads to Hamadawi to win the game and break Toulouse hearts in the 82nd minute. And he made it look easy. And we've seen him do it in the past for the All Blacks and for the Hurricanes. But this was a moment of magic and brilliance in the top 14 this weekend. And so easily the meter moment of the weekend for me. And the best bit, again, it didn't go down well with the opposition bench, but the reaction of the Stade Francais bench, the staff, and the fans, it was absolutely phenomenal. So the break and the piece of play by Lua Mappe, world-class piece of play and easily the meter moment of the week.
Do you agree, Benji? And La Marpe hasn't exactly torn it up early in his top 14 career, has he? So is this him kind of settling in and announcing himself fully for Stade Francais?
Well, when you sign, and I'm sure there's a huge financial commitment with him, when you sign such a superstar, you expect him to deliver on the pitch. But when he does on such a crucial moment, on a clutch moment or whatever you want to call it, it's even it's just the more sweeter. And so I'm actually happy for him, just because, you know, you want guys to live up to the reputation. And like Johnny said, there wasn't much there, but boy, did he deliver. The only upsetting thing that I've got with that, the reaction of the Stade bench, Laurent Sampere, Gonzalo Quesada, and Julian Arias, who I played with, all three of them, was genuine, was heartfelt, and that was awesome, right? The only issue that I've got, for me personally, the ref completely melted in the last couple of minutes. And there was at least two or three tough calls that he just did not make, including, and I think that's the reason why Toulouse got so pissed off, because there's a clear contest by this big guy, Yuyut. He's a good player, mate.
Very good.
His second row, and remember, Joe Tecori said he's probably the only guy that could take on his legacy of the biggest drinker of Toulouse, so beware.
Watch out.
He's definitely got the hands on the ball, and he's pulling it. Hands off for some whatever reason. He just doesn't want to take the tough play. Imagine a penalty could have been the winning Ken penalty. If they score, they score. You know, nobody can say anything. If you give the winning penalty, it's the ref that's sort of responsible for it. And he just clearly stepped away, didn't want to say anything because he didn't want to start to lose because of his decision. And then on that same play, that's when they chucked the ball to Mbappe and he scores. So they were furious.
And there were three.
And I think, unfortunately, it's pretty fair for them to be furious about it.
There were three as well that they had fair right to be furious with. The first one was JJ Vandermeest. Has like a shoulder charge on Joe Tecori's head. It goes to the TMO, and the referee almost argues with the TMO to bring it down from a red to a yellow. So the TMO is saying, look, he's contacted his head. It's a red card. But he says, no, it's a yellow. Just gives him a yellow. That's the first one. The UU penalty, the phase before, that doesn't allow the penalty for Toulouse. They were raging. And then there was a scrum penalty as well. That was a clear scrum penalty to Toulouse. So again, that's a huge win for Stade Francais, because the last 5 minutes, everything was stacked against them. They should have been penalized three or four different ways. But again, doesn't take away from the reaction, the piece of play that was magical by Léo Mbappé.
Absolutely. Not the referee, but Léo Mbappé's break. That was Johnny and Benji's Meter moment of the week. And Meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 11 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. You can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan, and you can get your hands on one at meter.com and get 10% off any full-price item with the code FrenchPod10 at checkout as well. Plus, for another few days until the 11th of March, you can be in with a chance of winning a trip to Marcus Borden's UK barbecue school in the heart of the Devon countryside with every purchase of an ultimate bundle. For more details and to be in with a chance to win, just visit meter.com and look for the ultimate bundle. That's it. Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. And a big thanks to all you guys for listening. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review as well. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
See you, fellas. Bye.